Our last case for argument, Hawkins v. United States. Mr. Weber.
May it please the court, I am Sean Weber and I was appointed by this court to represent Mr. Bernard Hawkins in his appeal. Your Honors, Mr. Hawkins is serving a sentence as a career offender, even though according to the laws of the United States, he is not a career offender. This constitutes a miscarriage of justice, and he must be resentenced.
Do you have any other appellate court opinions that have held, as Narvaez has, that a guidelines error such as this one recognizes a cognizable miscarriage of justice?
Your Honors, you're Judge Roebner, you're correct. Mr. Hawkins' claim does stem almost unilaterally from this court's case of Narvaez. However, based on this court's precedent and the logic and the analysis and ultimately the holding of Narvaez, he would argue, and so would I, that Narvaez alone will provide him the relief and the cure for the miscarriage of justice in this case. In fact,
those were mandatory guidelines in Narvaez, weren't they?
That's
the difference.
That's correct, Judge Posner.
The judges depart frequently now under the Booker regime, don't they, from guidelines?
Correct, Your Honor. The Narvaez case did arise from a pre-Booker mandatory guideline sentencing scheme, and Mr. Hawkins' case does arise from a post-Booker advisory guideline scheme, but that distinction itself is without a legal difference. And in fact,
what do you mean without a legal difference?
Because when this court looks at its holding and its logic and its analysis on Narvaez, it focused on when the miscarriage of justice occurred. And in Mr. Narvaez's case, the miscarriage of justice occurred at the moment the district court found Mr. Narvaez to be a career offender. The same holds true in Mr. Hawkins's case. Judge Moody of the district court, in fact, admitted in denying Mr. Hawkins' 2010 habeas petition that he had committed legal error. But Judge Moody said the legal error didn't rise to the level of a miscarriage of justice because...
there are a few trials that are actually devoid of legal error. Question is whether this is serious enough to invoke post-conviction relief, given how often judges depart from the guidelines.
Understood, Your Honor. However, again, looking at this court's...
How do we decide that? What should we consider?
First and foremost, this court should consider its logic and its analysis of Narvaez.
I don't see the logic. I don't see that. What are the practical considerations that warrant post-conviction relief when there's an error in the guidelines?
In this case, you focus on whether or not there was a miscarriage of justice, and there was a miscarriage of justice.
What does miscarriage of justice mean?
Miscarriage of justice means, according to the Supreme Court of the United States, is that the sentence is so egregious.
So you're just going in circles. All you're saying is the sentence is not the correct guideline sentence. That's what you're saying. The words miscarriage of justice don't add anything. Now, the question is whether every error in calculating the advisory guideline sentence should give rise to post-conviction relief.
And this court has made clear that every error does not arise to the level.
Which errors do?
Well, and certainly in Mr. Hawkins' case, the error has arose because it's undisputed that the government, the probation department, Judge Moody himself said, but for the career offender enhancement, he would have likely sentenced.
You're saying likely. You're saying that any case in which there was a misapplication of the guidelines that may have changed the sentence, there should be post-conviction remedy consisting of resentencing.
No, Your Honor, I'm not.
Okay, what would be an example of a case where the judge says, oh, I blew it, I miscalculated the advisory guideline, and, quite likely, it's likely I would have given a different sentence.
Your Honor, this is not a strict miscalculation case. Mr. Hawkins' relief stems 4 years after the district court sentenced him, and it comes.
You've lost me. So, the judge gives him a sentence, and then years later, says, you know, I gave him a guideline sentence. I miscalculated the guidelines. If I'd calculated them correctly, I probably would have given him a lower sentence. Well, I can't be sure because they are just advisory. Probably I would have given him a lower sentence. Is that sufficient to trigger post-conviction relief, a resentencing?
A resentencing in this court.
Is that sufficient to trigger a resentencing?
As far as any amount?
I gave you my example. The judge says I miscalculated the guidelines. If I calculated them correctly, I probably would have given him a guideline sentence, and it probably would have been lower, or certainly would have been lower, than what I did give him. Now, is that enough for resentencing?
I think, yes, Your Honor, it is. And according to this...
Okay, but then we're going to have... habeas corpus or 2255 in every situation which is possible to argue that the judge miscalculated the advisory guidelines en route to giving a sentence.
Isn't the point here that had Hawkins been sentenced after Chambers decided he couldn't have been sentenced as a career offender?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Isn't that the problem here? That he, you know, that what Judge Moody did was he based his sentence, that 151 months, on Hawkins having been a career offender. And he's not.
Correct.
He's not a career offender.
But he could have sentenced him to the 151 months.
Although, if you look at what the district court's analysis, under the post-Booker advisory guideline...
He could have sentenced him to 151 months within the statutory maximum.
Judge Moody would have the discretion. However, this court has been clear in post-conviction or in a post-Booker world. In fact, Judge Rovner, you wrote the opinion in 2007 of Miranda, which says the first thing the district court must do is find the appropriate sentencing guideline scheme. And here Judge Moody has admitted.
Judge Rovner also wrote the opinion pre-Chambers that held that a walk-away, you know, escape, failure to show is a crime of violence.
Yes, well, once in
so
a while.
So until the Supreme Court spoke, you know, this was an area of uncertainty.
She's changed her mind. Women have a right to do that.
There's no doubt if this court were to grant Mr. Hawkins the relief he seeks, which is an immediate resentencing before the district court, to stand before the court as he has a right to do as a non-career offender, Judge Moody will likely...
You see what the problem is. You have this, I think all the courts before Chambers, before the Supreme Court in Chambers, had very dubiously, in my opinion, I actually wrote the lower court opinion in Chambers and said, you know, this looked like a bad rule, but all the courts, including our court, recent opinion by Judge Rovner, had said this is a crime
of
violence.
Not so recent.
So we declined to overrule it and left that to the Supreme Court. But what that means is, to me, there's a lot of uncertainty about the guidelines present many uncertain issues. And the crime of violence, whether it's under the guideline, career criminal guidelines or under the, you know, Armed Career Criminal Act, they're full of uncertainty. And there have been a lot of decisions by the Supreme Court, and there's still a lot of debate over these various, you know, the other crimes. So given that uncertainty, why is it so egregious that you have a defendant who, had he been sentenced later, when the law had changed, would have done better.
Your Honor, I see my time has expired. May I answer your question?
Well, would I ask you if I didn't intend you to answer it? What would that point be? That would be a rhetorical question.
Fair enough, Your Honor.
I'd say, I've asked my question. I certainly don't want it answered. I wish lawyers would stop asking us after the red light goes on, do you want me to answer the question? I mean, just think about it. Why would the judge ask the question if he didn't want it to be answered? Where did this gesture come from?
Moot court.
Moot courts? That's when you learn that.
And some of your brothers.
I don't believe. Okay, anyway, what's your answer?
The distinction is one of certainly magnitude in this case, Your Honor. 120 months sentencing.
I know that, but we want a general answer. I mean, because you don't want to, you're not advocating a rule, are you, that if his sentence was only a month longer than it would have been after Chambers, would that warrant a resentencing?
Our argument has nothing to do with whether it was 1 month,
well,
I presume,
my
or 120.
Question. So it would still, even if it were 1 month, would still require resentencing.
If he was sentenced as a career offender, when he was sentenced as a career offender, there's no if.
I want you to say the 151 months has nothing to do with it. The sentence is irrelevant.
Exactly. In cases where the district court sentences someone as a career offender, when the laws no longer consider him a career offender.
Offenders, though, surely. This is limited to any situation where the meaning of the guidelines is altered by a judicial decision.
That's what the government argues. That's not Mr. Hawkins' case.
Well, I don't understand you. What difference does it make whether it's a career offender guideline that jacked up his sentence or some other guideline, the pattern activity guideline or the restitution guidelines or relevant conduct guidelines.
Any time, I think,
you know, of drug amounts.
I think the limiting factor here, Your Honor, is when there's a
post-conviction
clarification.
Yes, so it has nothing to do with the career offender guidelines. It's just a judicial decision which has changed the interpretation of a guideline after the conviction, after the sentence. In any such case, the defendant is entitled to resentencing.
I disagree. I believe Mr. Hawkins' case is a very narrow.
I don't understand. You know, we have this pattern of activity guideline, which has very serious consequences for sex offenders. Suppose the Supreme Court held that, no, that guideline can't be applied to just any old previous sexual offense you had. There are certain limits and this and that. So they narrow it the way they narrowed the career offender guideline in Chambers. Okay, why would there be any reason to treat that kind of judicial revision of a guideline any different from the career offender guideline?
Because it's the career offender guideline in this case, which has arisen in Hawkins' case.
I'm asking the principle. The principle.
The principle very well may apply to other cases, and if this.
Well, that's the problem, because that means every time you get a judicial decision, which lightens a guideline, makes it more favorable to a defendant. Your proposition, every time that happens, the defendant has a right to be resentenced under the latest judicial interpretation. Isn't that your position?
Yes, because the sentence would
That's
be because the sentence is
right.
illegal.
I'm just interested. That's your position. It can be 1 month, can be anything. Okay.
Because the sentence is illegal. Thank you.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Weaver. Mr. Holler?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Not every error of law is cognizable under Section 2255.
Say it again.
Not every error of law is cognizable under Section 2255. And Congress has explicitly limited relief to those errors that constitute a fundamental defect which inherently results in a complete miscarriage of justice.
Well, is this a fundamental error? The first step in a sentencing court is either pre-Booker or post-Booker, is to turn to the guidelines as the starting point, right?
Yes, Judge Roedner.
Okay. So we'll call that step A. Isn't what is being argued here that the error was that in turning to step A, the court turned to the guideline that said 151 to 188 months instead of the one that said 15 to 21 months? Isn't an error in step A, once again, the same pre- or post-Booker? How can that not be a fundamental miscarriage of justice when a court turns to a guideline that's 10 times the one that the court should have turned to?
Because of the very reason, Your Honor, that so many other things changed in the post-Booker world. The same reason that the guidelines no longer present ex post facto problems are the same reasons that they no longer present
know,
the same problems in 2255.
We've already determined that an escape conviction is not a crime of violence. Mea culpa.
I agree, Your Honor, that the guideline range was calculated incorrectly. This court said in Scott and Springs long before the guidelines were even made advisory, that an ordinary error in miscalculating the guidelines does not rise to a constitutional error and does not rise to an error of law that is a fundamental miscarriage of justice. And when this court looked at Narvaez, the court twice emphasized in italics that the reason was there was a mandatory guideline. If the district court judge in Narvaez had said, I firmly disagree with this career offender calculation, I just think it's wrong, there was nothing that the court could have done. And so when the court miscalculated that guideline, and it turned out to be wrong, this court granted relief. In 2005, Mr. Hawkins made this very pitch to the district court. Mr. Hawkins said, I should be given a guideline of 15 to 21 months because this escape walkaway career offender thing is hocus. It shouldn't be that way. And the district court judge disagreed. Now, the district court judge could have agreed if it wanted to. And that's what makes this not a fundamental miscarriage of justice, because that's the standard that has to be met. In ad initio, the Supreme Court, Your Honor, stated that not every error allows resentencing. And the judge in ad initio, Your Honor, said, if I had known what was going to happen with the guidelines, I never, ever, ever, ever would have given this guy a 10-year sentence.
Well,
I would have
we
given
have
him a 3-year
something
sentence.
Pretty similar here. The district court didn't want to depart upward. He sentenced him to the bottom of the guidelines.
Well,
and it's clear, it's so clear when you read this case, that the district court based his 151-month sentence on the career offender status and not on any 3553 factors, because he went through those in such rote and never once stated anything specifically about Hawkins or any of his characteristics or actions. And he also said a number of times that he was giving a great deal of weight to the guidelines that apply to a career offender, which the man isn't. We're in Alice in Wonderland.
I disagree with that, Judge Roedner, and I would make two points.
Of course, you don't want to be Alice.
No, but I have two points, Your Honor, which the first is that I agree with you that this is exactly like ad initio. And in ad initio, the Supreme Court unanimously said, despite the fact that it's absolutely clear that this judge wouldn't have given that sentence, the defendant doesn't get any relief. Okay, so that's the first point. And the second point, Your Honor, is the fact that the district court judge looked at this and said, you're right, I think that the career offender guideline is bang up correct in this case back in 2005, does not mean that if the guidelines had suggested 15 to 21 months, the district court judge would have said, yep, and because that's the guideline range, I have to give the guideline sentence. Judge Moody does not always give guideline sentences. Judge Moody gives below range and above range sentences.
Why don't we just send it back to him and see what he will do? You know, you seem to think that Narvaez, or however you pronounce it, is an outlier, wrongly decided, should be reversed.
Well, you're unhappy
with that case. Well, of course you're unhappy with this one.
We do think that, Your Honor, but to extend the narrow special – I mean, this Court said that Narvaez was a special and narrow exception. That's what it said.
But this case is exactly that case.
No.
No, it's not that case, Your Honor, because the
mandatory guideline.
What's the difference?
What's the difference between advisory and mandatory?
What if you send it back, and Judge Moody gave a variety of reasons why he came to this particular situation? What happens then?
Your Honor, the answer is that the court should not send the case back in the first place, because the court needs to institute a bright line rule.
That's not his question.
Answer the question. What if we sent it back, and Judge Moody did an extremely thorough job of outlining the reasons point by point why he thought this particular time was appropriate, and that was the sentence he handed down? What would we do then?
If the court explained that it would still implement a 151-month sentence, well, then I don't know how there could possibly have been a miscarriage of justice. But I don't think that the court should do that, because I don't think that the district court judge should. We're looking at Judge Moody's mind
and our mind. I mean, what if we say we think maybe there is, but he says I don't think there was.
Judge Kaney, in Adonizio and in Springs, the courts could have done that. The courts could have said, we're not sure if the judge, in light of the change in the guidelines or misunderstanding the guidelines, would have done anything. But in those cases, it was actually clear in the record.
Let me ask a variant of Judge Kaney's question. Suppose the case were remanded, and suppose Judge Moody said, I don't agree with this notion that walk-away escapes are harmless and they don't predict recidivism and so on. I think they're very serious. I think the old guideline was right. And my penal philosophy requires a very heavy sentence to this walk-away guy. And I think my 151 months is fine. Now, he can do that, right?
He could do that. He could look at things and determine that a 240-month sentence is appropriate in this case, I believe, if he could justify it under the guidelines, because that's under the 3553A factors, excuse me. But the point of that, Your Honor, is just to show why he doesn't meet the standard in the first place. He can't show that there was a fundamental defect that inherently, to me inherently means in every case, results in a fundamental and complete miscarriage of justice. He can't get in the door to make that argument in the first place. That was the situation in Adonizio.
What he's saying is that if the judge could impose the same sentence, then there's no, what you call miscarriage of justice, there's no error serious enough to warrant relief, because there's really no reason to think the defendant will do any better when he's resentenced.
That has always been our position, Your Honor, and that's why we took the position in Welsh that because the defendant could not receive that sentence, because it was above the statutory maximum, that he was entitled to relief.
Well,
now, this court in Narvaez, I'm sorry, go
sorry,
ahead.
Sorry, no.
No, this court in Narvaez, we disagreed in Narvaez, and we said the person could get the same sentence because on remand they could get that 240-month sentence. And this court disagreed, and what the court did is it looked at the time. It looked at 2003. That's the way I interpret the court's decision anyway, Your Honor. It looked at 2003, and it said in 2003 the guidelines were mandatory. And so back in 2003, whatever you want to say now, government, he couldn't have gotten a different sentence. He was going to get that sentence. Okay, if we apply the same language of Narvaez now and go back to 2005, Mr. Hawkins could have gotten a 15-month sentence. He could have gotten a 21-month sentence. He could have gotten a 151-month sentence, and he could have gotten a 240-month sentence.
If the judge understood what he would now understand, which he couldn't have understood at that point.
Well, Your Honor.
Couldn't have.
I agree, Your Honor, but then if one takes that position, then the same is true if there was a one-level error in guideline calculation, as Mr. Weaver pointed out. If there was any error in calculating the guidelines. In fact, because 3553A4, which is the guidelines, is really no different than any of the others, it would seem to me that, for example, Tapia error, misunderstanding one's ability to, whether one should be giving additional punishment for rehabilitation purposes, or misunderstanding some fact relating to one's background, background or the nature of the offense. If the judge made some mistake about the nature of the offense, that would be entitled to relief, not just on direct appeal. We agree, Your Honor, that these would be cognizable on direct appeal. But on 2255 relief, years later, or any time within the one-year window, frankly, these could come in. This would be a complete overruling of Scott Springs.
What you're saying is that the judge actually in this case is not bound by Chambers, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Say, look, Chambers, they think walk-away escapes are not important and shouldn't enhance a sentence. I disagree. And as long as the sentence is within the statutory maximum and he is invoking 3553A, he's perfectly free to do that.
That is correct, Your Honor. And again, if that is exactly what we're saying. And the district court could have said that in 2005. The district court in 2005 could have said, if he had correctly known, if he had been, and there were disputes about this. I think the D.C. Circuit disagreed with this court's opinion, and even this court started to disagree with this court's opinion after a while. But you know, that's what happened at the 2005 sentencing, and in addition to many other things. And the defendant said, give me a 15 to 21-month sentence. That's what he asked for. He said, I'm not a career offender. I just walked away. We actually sort of disagree with that based on the facts of the case that we've sort of laid out, that he's really a walk-away, a true walk-away kind of innocent, relatively innocent defender. But regardless of that, that's the point is, because he could have been sentenced to 15 to 21 months at the time, or 151 months if they'd gotten the guideline range right, he doesn't meet the narrow window of 2255 in Justice Stevens' opinion in Adonizio. And we think that because he does not qualify for relief under 2255, his relief would have to come through a pardon or through certainly the Sentencing Commission could make changes to 4B1.1 and make it retroactive, just as it's done in the crack guideline. There are potential remedies.
I'm sorry, did you mention waiver? Is there an issue of waiver in this case?
I don't think that there's necessarily an issue of waiver. I do believe Judge Moody discussed an issue of procedural default and found that we had waived our procedural default defense. In light of that finding, we didn't make any effort to re-raise it here since we figured this court would take the same attitude. But I think that's, as far as I'm aware, that's the only waiver argument that was present in the case, Judge King.
Thank you, Mr. Holler.
Thank you, Your Honors. We would ask that the court affirm.
So, Mr. Weber, we'll give you a minute. Anything further?
Thank you. The government's argument that there's no relief in this case because the district court might impose the same sentence, it's the same argument that the government presented this court in Narvaez. Same argument it rejected in Narvaez, and in fact, this court called that frailed conjecture. The issue here is that Mr. Hawkins has an absolute right, quoting from Narvaez, an absolute right not to stand before the district court as a career offender because the law does not impose that label on him. We know Judge Moody's sentencing decision was based upon the career offender classification. But for that, he would have been at 33 months. And lastly, I think it's persuasive and instructive to know that your own district court, the Western District of Wisconsin, and Judge Connolly recently in 2012 in the spring, applying Narvaez to the exact case that we have here, a post-Booker advisory guideline sentencing scheme, read this court's opinion, saw that it applied in the thought process and the logic and ultimately the holding applied in that case, and he entitled his defendant or the defendant on habeas relief there to be resentenced as a non-career offender.
Mr. Holler explained the situation in Narvaez was that Narvaez couldn't have been sentenced back in 2003 because at that time it couldn't have been because at that time the guidelines were mandatory. He couldn't have been given a different sentence. Whereas Judge Moody could have given whatever sentence he wanted. Right, he could have ignored the career offender guidelines, given your client a lower sentence.
I don't think he could have ignored the notion of classifying him as a career offender.
No, he has to go through and calculate the guideline sentence, but then he can depart from it.
And he can depart, but this court's precedent and Miranda or Bradley would demonstrate that any departure, either enhancement or downward, is still scrutinized. And he's on the record as saying, with the same facts, Mr. Hawkins has committed no further crimes. He's been incarcerated since 03. The same facts, if the district court were to see this again.
It's very light review, right? As long as, right.
It's very light.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not? Well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client. We'll quickly thank Mr. Holland.